Manufacturing was starting to show tentative signs of recovery before the riot. Let's not forget that the sector was on its knees before COVID struck due to a range of factors, from load shedding to steel input costs, disagreements on how to pursue localization, issues around competitiveness and dealing with leaky customs, as well as the construction mafia. Now, one just has to drive through the former industrial belts of the East Rand and Vereeniging to see where we've gone from conveyor belt to rust belt. But the manufacturing sector is high on the government's agenda for the economic rebuild, and the contribution it could make towards creating sustainable jobs is at least appreciated. It's got a high multiplier effect. Now, whether we can all agree on how to achieve that remains to be seen. But one thing is for sure, the rise of the so-called business forums, organized mafia-type gangs trying to secure jobs and pieces of contracts through criminal extortion, is now firmly in the national spotlight following the riots. What picture emerges in the wake of the recent unrest? Let's welcome our panel to find out. Ayanda Ngadi, who is a Hulamin Group Executive for Corporate Affairs and also Chair of the Manufacturing Circle. Webster Mfebe, who's Chief Executive of the South African Forum of Civil Engineering Contractors. Philippa Rodzith, Executive Director of the Manufacturing Circle. And Peter Barnard, a partner at law firm Cox Yates. Ayanda, with your Hulamin hat on, your operations are based in Pietermaritzburg. What was the extent of the damage and the disruptions to your operations?
Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity. It's really been a trying period. Thankfully, not for us as a business specifically, in terms of the physical damage to the property and so on. But obviously, the major disruption in the logistics chain, just not only for us as a business, but just for the city in general, literally brought the city to its knees. And I think we, just as a city, we had no anticipation that it could be this bad. And there's a number of businesses, number of manufacturing businesses that were either looted or burned or just left to destruction. So it's really been a trying period. And as the city was busy rebuilding, then we had the next blow, which is possibly one of the biggest and busiest ports, which is the Port of Durban, being among the ports that have been disrupted by the recent occurrences around the national port system. So it's been a trying period, and I think the repercussions of just the days of production that we have missed are going to be felt for the balance of the year by all businesses beyond Hulamin.
No doubt, and the damage to confidence as well. What is the mood like on the ground? Because while we have seen pictures of communities standing up to the looting and rioting, surely investor confidence has taken a significant dent. We saw the likes of Toyota issuing a very firmly worded letter to the provincial leadership. What is the confidence like at the moment?
So the confidence is really dented, and I think that has been seen through a number of force majeures that have been declared by a number of businesses. And I think when businesses are cornered almost into that position where they almost do not know what the future holds, it does become quite problematic, not only for the clientele that they serve, but for the investors that have actually put their money behind their name. And whilst we say that, I think it's important to highlight the critical role that various members of the community have played in keeping, you know, fire literally away from businesses. In our case, we even had our own employees standing up saying, okay, we need to come back and just see how best we can stand next to our own organization and secure our own future. So we've really gone through a harrowing experience as a country, one that we would have never anticipated. And I think like I indicated earlier, just the implications of everything that we've gone through, particularly in the past month, is probably going to be counted in billions come end of the year.
And Philippa, you know, broadly speaking, and looking at the broad membership of the manufacturing circle, many of your members have operations in KZN and the parts of Gauteng that were impacted. What feedback are you getting from your members on the scale and the damage of the last few weeks?
The experience has significantly impacted our members. Our members, as you note, are based across the country. And the thing about manufacturing is that, you know, it's the backbone of the economy. It's tangible. Our factories are based in KZN, in Gauteng, in various municipalities where municipal service delivery is you know, on an ordinary week, challenging in certain areas. So the impact has been significant because supply chains are disrupted. So irrespective of whether you are based in KZN or not, you know, the Durban port is going to impact on exports or the import of inputs that are required in the manufacturing process. And because it is so tangible by way of factories, you know, many manufacturing processes require gases. Those are flammable, you know, so the impact on having to stop operations and the impact on employees and the community has also been significantly felt. So it has impacted the entire manufacturing ecosystem.
And that was to go on top of COVID, and we were starting to see some tentative signs of recovery. If you look at the leading indicator, the SARB leading indicator, it was at least trending in the right direction. Some of the PMI numbers as well, and then this happens. Webster, to bring you in on to one of the major issues that has emerged through this crisis is a real spotlight now nationally on these so-called business forums, groupings of individuals who have for several years now, at least the past 5 years, as far as I can tell, been on site at various construction or other manufacturing concerns, demanding percentages of projects and using very criminal tactics in order to get their way. What has your experience been of these so-called business forums or construction mafia in the engineering sector?
Well, it has been devastating. Just to put it into perspective, the site disruptions to date affected projects to the value of 43 billion rand, and over 250 member sites nationally have been disrupted, especially actively, more than any other time since 2019. And one of the companies that experienced the most disruptions was WBHO, with over 70 sites that have been affected. But we decided to take a constructive engagement strategy with the business forums up to a point where these disruptions have significantly subsided. We have been in contact with the Black Business Forum, which is the umbrella body for all business forums, and they have engaged with us and have committed themselves to ensuring that there is peace and stability on construction site, especially post the lockdown. They have written to me committing themselves to peaceful means in terms of achieving their objective of being involved in projects. However, having said that, there are competing business forums that are not within the umbrella body of the BBF, which is the Black Business Federation, who do their own things. But in those cases where we become aware, we engage them and they get involved and they help us resolve those minor problems. So disruptions on sites have been there, the sporadic incidents in various provinces, including Northern Cape now and Mpumalanga, and we're compiling that information so that we can escalate it through the established channel with the South African Police Services at the head office level.
So the business model is in fact jumping to other provinces here, but I want to get a better handle and understanding of what that particular modus operandi is. And Peter, you've worked on several cases involving the so-called business forum. What is their MO? What are they demanding at the various sites that you've acted on?
Yes, thank you. So I agree with Webster to a point, and I commend the efforts that are being made. But as he's highlighted, there's a concern that there isn't one regimented structure. He talks about the Black Business Forum, which is a fairly reputable organization, but then you have other groupings, other forums, other organizations that are pushing their own agenda. So it's a bit of an unruly horse to try and ride, because you don't have one group with one particular agenda. So the modus operandi will vary from project to project and province to province. This issue started in KwaZulu-Natal, as you alluded to, about 5 or 6 years ago, and has since become a national pandemic, affecting not just the construction sector, but also warehousing, development, retail, etc. And the typical modus operandi across all of the sectors is, these are our demands, you will meet the demands as far as possible. And to the extent that you do not meet our demands, we will cease your trading operations, we will shut your site down, and in certain extreme scenarios, we will hurt or kill certain individuals. And this is widespread now, not just in the construction sector, but we're seeing it in shopping centers, where they insist certain business forums or other such groups will be insisting on employment with regards to cleaning services, security services, teleoperations, etc. And the general threat and the trend that I've seen across the multitude of cases that I've done is the threat of unlawful conduct, unlawful shutdown, or violence or physical harm if those threats are not made. And in vulnerable times like this, these opportunities arise for these organizations. And when resilience is low, I would presume that there is more opportunity for them because people don't have the willpower or money or effort to try and take the legal channels, try and fight them in court, etc. And they start giving in to the demands. And as Webster said, to a point that can work, certainly, you certainly can achieve some resolutions in certain instances, employ some people, and it all goes well. But in my experience with organizations like this, there comes a point where the demands keep on growing, the expectations become more, the cost becomes more, the accountability becomes less, and then it gets to a point where it's no longer sustainable, and that's the point where problems arise.
On that point, absolutely. Webbs, I want to throw the ball back to you. Doesn't aren't you running a risk at acquiescing to some of the demands for peace now, at fomenting this kind of unlawful, clearly unlawful behavior for what it is, effectively, a mafia-style shakedown, to come out and say, well, unless you employ X number of our members, we're going to make it extremely difficult for you to trade. I mean, that's completely unlawful. Surely one has to take a zero-tolerance line to this, or else it's a slippery slope.
Yeah, you are correct. As far back as 2018, we engaged the National Prosecution Authority, who have agreed with us that such acts should be dealt with in terms of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, POCA, and be treated as such. And that points to the fact that there should be zero tolerance for the unlawful conduct and disruptions of construction sites. In our engagements with the Black Business Federation, we've made it very clear that violence is not an option, and we will not continue to engage with them if they resort into violence. Like I've already pointed out, it's other competing business forums. That's where the rule of law, the maintenance of law and order needs to kick in. This is the point we keep on making to the police at national level. That is why we have contact persons where these incidents occur, that we report them, that first and foremost, that they should be reported at the police station. There's a case number so that these can be followed upon and action taken accordingly. And where we are not happy with the rate at which the police are dealing with these matters, we have an open door policy with the National Police Commissioner and the designated officials at national level to deal with this incident. There can never be any tolerance for any kind of violence. And that is made very clear to those with whom we are engaging.
The spotlight on manufacturing and construction at the moment in the wake of the recent unrests and the emergence of the so-called business fora who are making unlawful demands in many instances, Ayanda, it all stems, I think, also from frustration on the ground. One can be very mindful of that. Local communities frustrated at a lack of economic opportunity can easily be corralled by these groups into making unlawful demands, but they're unlawful at the end of the day. Surely government now needs to come down quite forcefully on these illegal business fora and certainly the unlawful demands that they're making on lawfully conducted and constituted businesses.
I absolutely agree. I think it's really critical. You know, hindsight is a great benefit, because I think we all individually as sectors have experienced these approaches, if you can call them that. And I think it was more drastic, prevalent and hurtful, particularly in the construction sector. But in the end, when you think about, for example, manufacturers, how factories are located in South Africa, they're usually in the middle of either a township or on the edge of a township or in the middle of a municipality. So you're finding that location-wise, in terms of access, the factories are standing an opportunity of being quite harassed by these situations. It's unlawful. It shouldn't be tolerated. And we really would appeal to the leadership in the country to really work with different sectors of the economy to try and find a solution. Because what became very apparent in the period that we're coming out from is that you almost cannot have enough security. It literally, the system just gets steamrolled. So there has to be another solution, because otherwise, then you'll end up with more catastrophes like compared to what ended up taking place. It's an urgent and pressing situation.
Philip, is it not also a result potentially of some policy promises that were misconstrued and also policy confusion when it comes to preferential procurement? There was that Treasury note on a 30% set aside for local local service provided into a particular project. But if you look at the skills on the ground, whether or not we can fulfill that is questionable. Are we not looking from a policy perspective at fomenting the issue rather than trying to solve it?
In some instances, we see unintended consequences in the results of policy. In other areas, I like to focus on the conversation of our lack of implementation. We have a broad range of policies, but where we are really, really lacking is implementation, and also in the formulation of those policies as to what is practical and what isn't. So if I take your comments on the Vol Triangle going from conveyor belts to rust belt, for example, and we look at, so where are the issues, from a policy perspective? Perhaps we could look to tweak certain areas, but really it takes a concerted effort of understanding what do we need to do practically to implement solutions. So if for example, there are policy measures to increase local procurement by the way of designation or local manufacturing, that's generally a goal in the right direction. But how do we implement that? How do we understand what sort of specifications for products are required? Or if there is a set aside by way of a certain geographic jurisdiction or group of the population, do we have competencies in that area? And in some cases, it's often a chicken and an egg. So there's no silver bullet, but I would really focus on the importance of implementation, which we all as a country need to do a lot better. And also, to Ayanda's point, the importance of urgency in action. We spoke as the manufacturing circle of the Vol Triangle Rejuvenation Project 5 years ago, and recommendations not just to government, but what we need to do to increase demand for manufactured product, grow exports, see where local manufacturing is applicable, deal with supply side challenges, and work together in this regard. And really, 5 years later, that area is no longer what we called is no longer at a tipping point, but more at a breaking point.
Yeah, it's what Vusi Tembekwayo was saying yesterday. There's just no urgency in the South African economy at the moment. And, South Africa is a very small market for manufactured products. Some can be made profitably here. I think many others can't at the sufficient scale that we would need to for companies to be cost competitive. We need to get growth going, and then we can start talking about creating more opportunities for everyone. We're trying to create opportunities before we've got growth. Just as we end off here, and Peter, from your vantage point, what would you like to see happen to deal decisively with these business fora? What needs to happen from a government perspective now?
think that there's a confluence of two separate and distinct issues. One is something that we've just been discussing with regards to medical economic transformation and the upliftment of the local communities in order to try and promote economic growth and to reduce the level of unemployment. As we've just heard, there are certain acts and there are certain sectors which are dealing with this. For example, in the construction sector, you do have the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, which does address local employment and local empowerment as a subcontracting or supplying, etc. But that must not be confused from the Business Forum modus operandi, which is to insist that they be given those opportunities to the detriment of everyone else. And what we need, at least in that sense, political willpower. We've heard it in the State of the Nation address for the last 3 or 4 years, that this is something that will be seriously dealt with, but it is an ongoing issue. And these business forums are effectively stifling and taking those opportunities that are there for the local radical economic transformation and the local empowerment. And that distinction has to be drawn, because until these unlawful elements are set aside, those local communities and the economy will not be able to grow while those opportunities are being snaffled by unlawful perpetrators.
Very good point, well made. Webster, what would you like to see happen from here?
Yes, it's true that we need to distinguish between pure thuggery and genuine community concerns to get involved in community projects. And one approach that has worked very well is community engagement or facilitation ahead of projects, where communities and all role players are made aware of the project that is coming. They are given an opportunity and they register and they are assisted, and that they need to accept that whoever wins the bid, it will be on the basis of their competence and not on the basis of who wields the biggest gun to get the project. And we have implemented this with SANRAL to a greater success, for example, to lower the temperatures in those areas where thugs hijack the genuine concerns of communities. So I would say that community engagement or facilitation is very key, so that the community themselves are aware that everyone else has been given an opportunity and they are the ones to point out the thugs, so that they do not defile their genuine struggles.
And that's been a particular success factor in the vaccine rollout as well, is community engagement up front and working with people on the ground. Ayanda, just as we've got a couple of minutes to go, are you confident that the manufacturing sector can bounce back quickly from the recent knock, and that it's not a knockout blow?
We actually do not have a choice in the matter. We absolutely have to pull all stops to make sure that we finish strong. It's been a trying first half of the year. COVID has intervened. All the other factors have set our pace back. So we have to push hard to finish strong for the end of 2021. Otherwise, we will struggle to begin a strong 2022.
Philippa, what are you seeing? What are you picking up in the numbers that will give us some guidance as to the second half and the outlook for the manufacturing sector in the second half?
Well, Michael, what we always say and see at the manufacturing circle is that the sector is very responsive to the economy. So we will see impacts, as have been noted, in terms of lost production time. But the sector is also resilient. So there are ways to bounce back. And we just have to, as Ayanda says, we don't have a choice in the matter.
Absolutely.
We've got to continue engine of growth of the economy.
But the rule of law ultimately has to prevail for any kind of recovery to take hold. Obviously, there are issues around security of supply of electricity at a competitive cost and all of the other issues. But without the rule of law, and that really is what the business fora issue speaks to, you're not going to have confidence to invest. No investor in their right mind would. Around the table, we had Ayanda Mgadi, Hulamin Group Executive for Corporate Affairs, as well as the Chair of the Manufacturing Circle, Webster Mfebe, Chief Executive of the South African Forum of Civil Engineering Contractors, Philippa Rodzith, the Executive Director of the Manufacturing Circle, and Peter Barnard, a partner at Cox Yates Attorneys.